of you, I'm sure, is a familiar face. Rebbitzin Neuberger is a beloved Rebbitzin in Sinek, is a part of the YU family. Her husband is Rev Neuberger, is Rosh Yeshiva at Reitz, and she is a teacher at Manhattan High School. And so without further ado, Rebbitzin Neuberger, really honored to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a perk that it's Le'ilui Nishmas, Rabbi and Rebbitzin Lam. They had a lot to do with my certainly Rabbi Lam had a lot to do with my choice of chinuch. So that's very special. I didn't expect that, but that's very nice. I also, it's very nice that I see a lot of faces that I know. I am going to, first, my first disclaimer is I needed to come up with a title very quickly. So I wanted to make it something not ordinary. So I ended up going with the title, Tefillah For or Against. So I want to assure everybody that I am not against tefillah. Okay, that was kind of to tease your minds what I could be talking about. I'm also, the next hint is going to be that I was in a mindset, we're in this COVID-19 mindset. So that was the number that was playing in my head. But before I do any of that, and I'm going to ask you to please feel free to, more than feel free, I would love if you would answer questions as I go along, whenever I ask. The first I'm going to ask is just a knee jerk. If somebody said to you, what's a prerequisite for tefillah? In a word, what do you need? You can't really daven without what? What would you say?
Concentration.
Concentration, kavana. That's probably the number one answer. Is there anything else you can't daven without?
Faith,
emuna.
A makom,
good. A makom. Anything else? Let me read to you a piece from Sefer HaChassidim. Now, Sefer HaChassidim is not a classic halacha book, but we take it very, very seriously. And after a lot of examples of what he's about to say, he makes the following statements: Mi she'eino ma'ale al halev etzar chaveiro ve'elbono. This is the only source I don't have out for you on a screen, so don't worry. Anybody who doesn't bring up on their hearts the pain or the suffering of somebody other than himself while he's davening, eino ne'ene, he's not going to get answered. A prerequisite of tefillah is davening for somebody else. That is not what this shir is going to be about, okay? But it is important to realize that a tefillah that is answered necessarily has to have a moment in it where you're thinking of the good of somebody else. That is why that explains a lot of times when in the tefillos where we add things, you know, like in Rifa'enu or in Shema Koleinu, we're always supposed to, Rifa'enu is most obvious because we actually have the nusach, that we say who it is that we want the refuah shlema for, and then we always come back to Beso Shar Chole Amcha Yisrael. When a parent blesses a child, Erev Yom Kippur, it's always Besoch Shar Tzadikei Yisrael. We can't expect a tefillah to be answered unless we are in the mindset of wishing well to somebody else at the same time that we're asking for ourselves to have a good verdict. Okay, so now I'm going to share the screen and we're going to look at some sources that are going to bring us to what the share is about, which is not this. Okay, but I'm going to start with this. Hang on 1 second. I have to move things around a little to get here. Okay. Does everybody see? Just did somebody answer me. Can you see?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So this is a Bracious Rabbah, a long piece of Agada. And says the following, based on a pasuk in Tehillim that you're all familiar with, because it's famous from what we call Ashrei. Tov Hashem lakol v'rachamav al kol ma'asav. Knee-jerk reaction. Don't look ahead. What does that mean? Tov Hashem lakol v'rachamav al kol ma'asav. Anybody answer me. It's not a trick question. What's the pshat?
Hashem is good to all and has mercy on all of his people.
Hashem is good to all, the Rachamav, and his mercy extends to all his creations. That is the pshat, that is the correct interpretation. But we go to the Medrash, we're going to have a fancy footwork at play, okay? Rabbi Yehoshua de Sichnin, B'shem Rabbi Levi Amar, here's the fancy footwork. Tov Hashem la kol, that means what it sounds like it means. Hashem is good to all. But v'rachamav al kol ma'asav is not parallelism. It is a new thought. V'rachamav, and that capacity for mercy which he has, he gives to every one of his creatures. Rabbi Tanchum of Rabbi Abba Bar Abba Mishem Rabbi Rav Acha proved this point with the following anecdote. L'machar, they say to their people, there's going to come a day in the future, shnat batzoret ba, and there's going to be a famine, a thirst, a hunger. V'habriyot merachamim elu al elu, and people are going to have mercy on each other, and that's what's going to bring an end to the drought or to the famine. V'kadosh baruch hu mitmalei aleihem rachamim, and because they're going to have mercy on each other, Hashem will be filled with mercy for them. B'yomi d'Rabbi Tanchuma, if you want us to prove this point, they say, let's go back to the time of Rabbi Tanchuma. The Bnei Israel hadn't had rain for a long time, so they needed to make a tanis to a fast day to have rain. Asam Lagabe, Amrin Le, Rebbe Gazar Tanisa. So they went before him and they asked him to make a tanis because they had no rain and it was getting desperate. Gazar Tanisa, Yom Kadma, Yom Bet, Yom Gimel. So he made it a fast, the first day, the second day, the third day. V'lo nachas mitra, but rain did not fall. Okay. And he then, there's some extra letters here because they were supposed to be small, but Alva Darash Lahem Lahon, Amar Lahon, he said to them, you know, the Thomas is not working. You know why? Because the real prerequisite for a good tefillah, for tefillah that gets answered, Banai Hitmalu Rachamim Elu Alelu, have mercy on each other, Ba'akarish Baruch Hu Mitmalei Alecha. And then the result will be that Hashem will have mercy on you. So they run and they start giving tzedakah, even though they don't have much because it's a drought time. But whatever they have, they share with aniyim. And from the corner of their eye, a bunch of people espy a man who is giving money, this is a transaction of money, to his ex-wife. And it looks to them, because that's the only reason they can think of, is that the marriage didn't work out for whatever reasons, but he's paying her for some intimate favors, which he doesn't really want to give up on. And that's usur. Asim l'gabe, so they go back to the Rabbanim and they say, Me'anan Yasvin Hacha Vavei Rasa Hacha. We're sitting here, we're doing everything we can to bring the Rachmanis of Hashem. And we have this guy doing an Aveira in public right in front of us. Amar lehen mara item. So he said, tell me exactly what you saw. Ra'inu adam ploni notein ma'ot legrusha tawi. So a guy having a transaction of money with his ex-wife. So he sends for the guy, Amar le, and he says to him, Mai lachazo, what is this woman to you? Amar lo grusha tihi. She's my ex. Amalo mibne mana tata lamod, you were espied giving her money. Why did you give her money? Amalo Rebbe, ra'iti ota bitzara, v'itmaleti ala rachamim. We may be divorced, but we had a relationship. I saw her in pain. I saw her in trouble. I saw she has no food to eat. And I was filled with compassion for her. So you said to be compassionate. What could be more compassionate than giving money to my ex for food? Okay, at that moment, Rabbi Tanchuma turned to Hashem. He said, Ribon Olamim, Me im ze she'ein la'alav mizonot. Here's this person, they're divorced, they're officially divorced, she has no claim on him or her food. He saw her in pain, and he had so much mercy that he saw to it that she had food. We are not divorced. We may have been bad, but we're not divorced. And you see us suffering that we don't have food. How much more so? You have to be filled with compassion about us. And that was the winning ticket. If they are compassionate, you are compassionate. That is the clue to tefillah. Okay. That, together with the Sefer Chasidim, makes a very strong point. I cannot daven. Some people even say that is the reason, maybe not the reason, but that is one of the advantages of tefillah b'tzibur when you're actually in a tzibur, because it reminds you when you see the person next to you and the person on the other side and person in front and person in back, you remember other people's pain and you include them in their davening. So if this is the case, I'm going to stop share for a moment so I can see you. If this is the case, then what what would be the worst thing to do when you're davening? If your tefillah prerequisite, or the an answered tefillah's prerequisite is to daven for somebody else, what could be the absolute worst thing you could do in your tefillah?
Daven for yourself only?
That's the next to worst thing. What would be even worse than that?
Not daven for someone else.
Stronger. You're such good girls. When you get older, I want to see this. Davening against somebody else. Somebody really messed you up. And you don't want to be that kind of person. But you find yourself a little wishing that they would get a taste of their own medicine or something like that. That's the absolute worst thing you could do. So we had a problem. Okay, now I'm going to ask you to recall that when tefillah as we know it began, when we went from emotive, personal, subjective bursts of tefillah, the way, according to Rambam, the way it was, Mida Oraisa, to what Ezra designed for us, Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, the structured tefillah, which we can say and often do in our sleep. That was a tragedy. It was a tragedy that had to happen. It was a tragedy because kavana became almost impossible when you have formulated tefillah. 500 years later, and we're not going to go into that tragedy now, that's a different shir. But 500 years later, when Rabban Gamliel was dealing with the early inroads of Christianity, and you know that the early Christians, they were us. They sat at our Shabbos tables and they tried to worm their way into the hearts of our children and convince them of a different religion, of a trinity instead of a unity. And it was very, very insidious and dangerous, and you didn't always recognize it for what it was. So the Rabbanim had to make people aware and conscious to be looking for any little thing that could be working against our monotheistic creed. And they deemed, because the early Christians were so anti and were so bent on turning us all over in the most sneaky ways, they said, we need a bracha against them. And that, you know, we read about it, and so they were mitakin this bracha. Let's now, I'm going to share the screen again, and I want you to see the pain. Okay. The second chapter in Hilchos Tefillah. Bimei Rabban Gamliel, Rabbu Apikorsin B'Yisrael. There were just so many heretics. And that was the time of the onset of Christianity in Israel. And they were the real tzara to Klal Yisrael at that time. And they tried to persuade them to give up the Hashem thing and buy into the Trinity thing. And when he, Rabban Gamliel, saw that this was the biggest need we had, there were 18 categories of need, well, actually 12 categories of needs, and this is the biggest one, Amadhu Beitino, same lashon as when we have the tragedy of having to make tefillah formal. There was another tragedy, that he had to make a bracha against the early Christians. V'hikin bracha achat she'tiyeh ba she'ela milifnei Hashem la'abed ha'apikorsan. And this bracha was going to ask to do away with the heretics. V'kava ota b'tefillah. And it wasn't just stemming from somebody's heart who had been hurt by them, but it was becoming a formal part of our tefillah that we would always say, "Kedei she'tiyeh arucha b'fi hakol," so that everyone would know it down pat, and you wouldn't have to think about it, you wouldn't have to maybe forget it. It would be part of your davening. Nimtzu kol habrachot shebat tefillah 19 brachot. And it turned out that all the brachos in our tefillah, which we call Shmona Esrei, 18, became 19. The operative number of the season, 19 brachos. And just like we don't like the number 19 now because it's associated with COVID, they didn't like the number 19 either. So let's look at the two problems they had. Problem number one, which is going to be easier to solve, was that when Ezra and his Beis Din were mitaken Shmona Esrei, it was done the Kovid Rosh. Again, it was a tragedy. They did it. They still had some Nevi'im among them. So they could use the mystics of numbers and of words and of letters, the little bit that was still left to the last Nevi'im. And they put together a tefillah, which was 18 brachos. Now, when I was a kid and we learned Shmona Esrei and some rudimentary understanding of it, in my mind, what went on with Ezra Ubeit Dino was that they got together, everybody had a legal pad, they wrote down all the things that people need to daven for, and then they culled them, like an actuary, they culled them together and they put them in categories. And the way it worked out was you had the three of Shevach and the three of Hoda'ah, and then there were 12 categories that everything could fit into, and that's how they came up with the number 18. Now that, of course, is not at all what happens. They came up with the number 18 and they fit everything into those 12 birchot bakasha because 18 was an operative number. Now, the Gemara has many different understandings of why 18, but for now, we're going to look, not even many, a few, we're going to look at two of them, two, probably the two most classic. First is the perek that I have up here, Tehillim Chavtet, the same one we say when we accompany the Torah back to the Aron, because according to some, this is about Matan Torah. According to others, it's about creation. According to everyone, it is about some seminal moment that you have to believe in order to be a person of faith in our religion, okay? So in this Tehillim, in this Tehillah, which extols Hashem and praises him for that moment, which has become the seminal or cardinal, one of our cardinal beliefs, whichever one it is, or maybe it's all of them. He uses Shem Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, the Shem Hashem of Rachamim and the Shem Hashem of infinity, Hayahu Veviyeh, 18 times. According to this, because this is so important to our Amunah, the 18 Azkarot, they're called, the 18 mentionings of Yud Kei Vav Kei became the basis for how many brachos would be in our structured tefillah, which we never really wanted to have anyway because it took away kavana, but at least get some magical number in there. So we took this magical number. Some of you, those of you who live in my community, you may have heard me tell this story before. I'm just going to stop to tell you this. This is one of my very formative moments or experiences as I was growing up. My grandmother, Bubby from Bronx. I had another one from Buffalo. Bubby from Bronx used to spend a lot of Shabbosos with us. Either I would go to her house, she would come to our house. Bubby from Bronx was from Yerushalayim, and she was bent on having Yerushalmi kids. We were growing up in the Bronx. It didn't really matter to her. We were going to be Yerushalmi kids. And she started, as soon as I could talk, I was saying Kabbalah Shabbos with her because that was very important. Yerushalmi women say Kabbalah Shabbos. And I was a lazy kid. And I noticed at some point that you can pretty much sit for all of Kabbalah Shabbos until the end of L'cha Dodi, except for this little whippersnapper over here where you have to get up for this perek. So my, you know, I was just sitting and I used to try to sit through this. And my grandmother, in her own inimitable fashion, would give a clap on my sitter. She would say, "Shtay off," which means stand up. So Zoy v'shmon esrei. It's the same as Shmona Esrei. And I used to roll my eyes 360 degrees. Everybody knows it's not the same as Shmona Esrei. She just wants me to stand up because that's what people do. So she's telling me it's like Shmona Esrei. She thinks I'm an idiot, et cetera, et cetera. So it took me a long time to figure out who was the idiot. But anyway, when I learned this this limud, I understood where she was coming from. Okay? So that meant that when Rabban Gamliel was introducing a 19th bracha, this was dangerous territory. Because part of why the magic of tefillah was going to work is because we have this magical number. To make matters worse, there was a backup. There was a backup source. And the backup source were the three parshios of Shema, Again, cardinal, Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim. You're not a believer unless you accept upon yourself these three paragraphs of Shema. And if you count up, you're just going to have to trust me that between Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem Elokecha, Elokechem, you go down straight through these paragraphs, you will come up again with 18 instances of Shem Hashem. So now, what were they going to do? They're already messing with life and messing with tefillah because they're introducing a negative bracha, a bracha against people. We don't have brachos that are negative throughout our Shemona Esrei, even when it's not people, even when it's a disease. We don't say destroy the disease. We say make us better. Nothing is against. We don't say destroy the enemies of Eretz Yisrael. Get the those who are in our land out. We say Hashivenu, bring us back. Liyushalayim Yerchat Hashuv. All our brachos are positive. Partly because we always have to be thinking for other people, and partly because positive energy is what Hashem wants us to utilize. Negative energy is a waste. So now we're going to have this negative bracha because they deem it necessary. There's no other way. And they're messing with the numbers. So the numbers was easily solved. Somebody noticed that in Tehillim, while there's Yudke Vavke appears 18 times, and that's Keneged Shmon Esrei, but there is one other Shem Hashem here. Where's the other Shem Hashem? Why can I find it now? Here we go. Kael HaKavod. It's like a shortened Elokim. Good enough. That's our 19th hint, or our hint for the 19th. What do we have here? Well, if what the Christians are threatening is the unity of Hashem, Echad, that is also a name of Hashem, and that's an appropriate one to make this bracha correspond to. That Shem Hashem is exactly what the problem is now. That is what we're trying to defend, so we're going to go for it. Numbers are fine. We can deal with the numbers. So now, the bigger problem. The bigger problem is that we're going to be davening against someone. So let's look. In Rambam summarized for us how it happens. Rabbi Gamliel made this bracha that everybody would say, good, because it was the worst tzara that we had. But the Gemara told the Rambam how this happens. So let's go back to the Gemara. Brachos chafches amid beis. Tanu Rabbana, there's a braisa. Shimon HaPakoli, okay, this is what he's famous for, not so much else. His dear Shmona Esrei brachos lufnei Rabban Gamliel. Shimon HaPakoli put the 18 brachos in order before Rabban Gamliel, probably means they were trying to figure out where to fit in this 19th, in Yavne. Amar lehem Rabban Gamliel, they have all the brachos set out before them. They're trying to figure out where this goes. And Rabbi Gamliel gets up, again, makes a clap. He says, "Klum yesh adam sheyodea l'takein berchat haminim?" Is there anybody who knows how to make the bracha for the heretics? And he's talking to his bezdin. These are articulate, eloquent people. These are people who teach Klal Yisrael. He's not concerned about vocabulary that people don't know how to put sentences together. There is something that he needs to make this bracha work. Amat Shmuel HaKatan v'tikna. Shmuel HaKatan got up, the small Shmuel got up, and he composed it. Now, what do we know about Shmuel HaKatan? If you say Mishnah Avos, Pirkei Avos regularly, then you know this. Shmuel HaKatan says, "B'nefol ayivcha al tismach." When your enemy falls, do not rejoice. Uvikashlo, and when he stumbles, al yageli becha, don't let your heart be ecstatic. Pen yireh Hashem, lest Hashem sees that joy that you get from somebody else falling. V'ra be'inav, and Hashem will not like that. V'heshiv me'alav apo, and he may have been angry at him to begin with, but you are going to become the new focus of the anger. do not go there. That was what Shmuel HaKatan used to say. But of course, what everybody questions is, Shmuel HaKatan missed the boat. He was long after the person who said it. Shlomo HaMelech was the person who said it in Mishlei. Exact verbatim. V'nefol al yivcha al tismach uvikashlo al yagel libecha pen yireh Hashem v'ra be'inav v'heshiv me'alav apo. What does it mean? I'll stop share for a moment because I need to see more people. Okay. What does it mean if I say to you, my mom always said, haste makes waste. Did my mom compose Haste Makes Waste? No, it was long before her. What does it mean if I say, my mom always said, haste makes waste?
It's something that she lived by?
Exactly. It means she lived by it. We don't really care who composed B'nefol Yivcha Al Tismach. When Pirkei Avos says to us, Shmuel HaKatan Haya Omer, that he said it, and we know it was composed before, that is a really strong statement. That's not telling us who wrote it. That's telling us who lived by it. One of the sources, which I didn't share with you, but I'll share it by a pen now, is that one of the famous things, rabbinic stories that involves Shmuel HaKatan, who, by the way, is probably called Shmuel HaKatan because he was very modest and he thought of himself as a real not important person. When Rabbi Gamliel asked people to come and be and talk about being Mekadesh HaChodesh, and you had to have designated people, so there was one extra person. Somebody came, as his kavod, and he was extra. And you can't be one of the people who designates this. I don't know the halacha so well, but you can't be the designator unless you're called to be the designator. So Rabbi Gamliel asked the person who was not called to please get up and leave. And Shmuel HaKatan got up and he said, I'm so sorry, I wasn't called, but I wanted to learn how you do Kiddush HaChodesh. And the Gemara goes on to tell us that he was not the one who was not called, but he was mortified that another human being would be embarrassed. So he took the hit. Okay, that's what it means to be Shmuel HaKatan. Only a Shmuel HaKatan can compose a bracha of the Lamal Shinim, because is there only a person like that who we know has no personal agenda, who doesn't want to get back at those minim because they messed up my family, they messed with my neighbors, they messed with my shir, they messed with my time, I can't give shir anymore. I sometimes feel like the Malbin or River Hirsch might have felt this way. So much time on the Haskalah that it takes away from your writing and your teaching. Good, serves him right. It couldn't be a person like that. It had to be a person who was pure in that arena, who absolutely never wanted anything bad to befall anybody. Only he could truly, and for the right reasons, with great pain, which you're supposed to have when you make a bracha like this, come up with the bracha. And this is the bracha, which you know by heart. Vila Malshinim, we're not going to talk about why there's a vav. Let's just assume the easiest answer, that it used to be Laminim Lamal Shinim, but then when the Christians got a hold of it, it was big tzaras, so we just left it for Lamal Shinim. Alti tikva, don't let there be any hope. V'chala risha kareka toved, and all of the evil should instantly be obliterated. V'chala ivecha meherayi karetun, and all your enemies should speedily cease to be. V'hazedim meherata aker, and all the rishaim you should uproot really fast. U'tishaber, and you should break them. Utimager, and you should destroy them. Vitachnia, and you should humble them. B'mheiravi amenu. Baruch atah Hashem, shover, you are the one who breaks the enemy and humbles the Rishai. That's the bracha, okay? That bracha is the same one we say today. We say it for all Jewish enemies. Now, let's turn our attention for a moment to two other vignettes, Talmudic vignettes. The first is in Brachos Dav Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay. Two great men who messed up because they didn't get Avilam El Shinim right. The first one, this Gemara in Brachos Zayin Amud Aleph, Umi karitcha kami dekutcha brichu. Okay, there's a pasuk that says the kel zo'aim bechol yom. Okay, kel zo'aim bechol yom means that Hashem gets good and angry, furious angry every day. The kama za'amo, the initial question, mi ika ritcha kame dekutcha brichu, is there some kind of boiling point before God? Yeah. The answer is yes. Every single day he gets to the boiling point, the kamazamo. Now, how long does that boiling point last? Says the Gemara, rega, a moment. And what is a moment in measurement? So you can read it on your own, but it turns out to be one out of 58,888ths of an hour, which is less than a split second. That's God's anger. That's how long it lasts, and it's only at one point in the day. The ein kol birya yecholah lachavein otasha, and there's no creature that can ever figure out when that moment is and make use of it, that Hashem should get angry at the person I want, because Hashem doesn't want us to use his anger to do in somebody else, and the only one who had that capacity was Bilam. So what happens? Have a minai da have a bishvivusa de Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi had a heretic in his neighborhood. Have a mitzaret leituva bikrai. And he used to make him good and angry. He gave him a lot of tsaras with Tanakh, with Torah. He found all the proofs of the New Testament in Torah. Yumachad, shakal tarnagola v'okami bein krai da'arsa yenba. Okay? So there was this idea out there extant, which I don't really understand these Kabbalistic things, but that the hour, the moment, the 158th, whatever of the hour when Hashem gets angry, that the crown of the rooster will turn a very specific deep shade of red at that split second. So he got himself a rooster and he put it between his feet and he just looked and stared at the rooster all night waiting for that moment to come. Kimata ishaita altaya. And he fell asleep. It is boring to look at a rooster. Kimata ishaita naim. And he fell asleep then. And he said, Shma mine lav orach ara lemei barachai. From this I learn that it is not the way, it's not derech eretz to work this way. I should not be davening for somebody to die. That's what he was going to ask. I have to have rachmanis on him. And the end of the story, and the end of Gemara, is that the person he was going to daven against, the min, ends up doing tshuva. A more famous story appears in Brachos Yud Amud Aleph. Hinu b'yune david b'shvavusei de Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir had a similar situation. Vaviko mitka mitzairo leituva. And he made him good and angry. Haviko bai Rabbi Meir Rachmei Alai. So Rabbi Meir decided he's going to ask Hashem to have Rachmanas on him, that this guy should die already. This Apikoros who's making life miserable for him and for everybody else. So Bruria, his wife, who we all know and love because she has an amazing personality and is also a little bit of a whippersnapper in her repartee. So she says to him, Bruria Devesu, his wife Bruria, my data, what the heck are you thinking? Mishum dechtiv, are you supposing that because in Tehillim it says, Yitamu chatai min haaretz, miksiv chotim, did anybody there write the word chotim, sinners? Chatayim ksiv. Yeah, it's true that by the diktuk, by the lack of a chataf patach, I know that in that case, a chata is a professional sinner, as opposed to Chataim meaning sins. Okay, I know that technically, but David could have just as easily written Chotim, and then it would have been clear that we want Yitamu Chotim, that we want the sinners to end. He wrote Chataim so that you should first think of another option. Maybe the sins should end. Maybe the sinners should continue. They should just stop doing their sins. And the proof of this, she says, is Shpela Sefei Dekra. Go to the end of the pasuk and you'll see Urshaim Odeidam. And they will no longer be Rishayim. Yitamu chatayim in haaretz. Let the sins be ended from the land, and then there will be no more Rishayim. What you have to daven for is not that he should die, but that he should do tshuva v'kachave. So this is how strong that ethic was, and yet here we have the birchas haminim against. We can never question that, because obviously they were the men on the spot. The tzara must have been enormous, that they had to override this. But throughout Jewish history, this has not sat right with anybody. We continue to use it for the Oyvei Yisrael, and we do it with great trepidation. We know that, as we said at the beginning, a prerequisite for good tefillah is davening on behalf of somebody else. It's almost like sabotaging your tefillah to daven against. So I want you to look at the following. I find this breathtaking. I'm going to share with you. These five sources. This is I don't have his nusach with you. I'm going to tell you ba'al peh what he says. The Ksava Kabbalah, that's his perish on Chumash, but his perish on Tefillah, he wrote a sefer called the Yun Tefillah, and that's very, very famous, okay? So Rav Machlenberg says the following. I can look in Tanakh. This does not sit right with me. I can look in Tanakh, and I can find for every single verb that is used in the Vlamal Shinim, which was composed by a person whose gut did not want somebody else to fall. It was the code. He did it on the face of it, he's asking for this, like a staccato of all kinds of destruction. But you know what he was really doing? He was using words that have other meanings that fall short of destruction. So for example, when in the bracha, he has the word kerega toved, should be obliterated. Well, look in Yechezkel, where Hashem says to Yechezkel, Ben Adam, he talks to Yechezkel, and he says, what's going on in town? I hear all these people saying, don't worry, just see it through, it's not really going to be a churban, ya'archu hayamim, just wait it out, there'll be a lot of days, v'avad kol chazon, and all those bad nevuas, they'll be obliterated, they'll be nullified. That doesn't, nullified, okay, so you'll nullify the risha, you'll turn it, it'll be like, they won't be rishaim anymore. It doesn't mean really destroy. Look in Yehoshua for Yikares. When he talks to the Givonim, remember the Givonim are the people who made believe they were coming from very far to make a treaty, and they ended up succeeding, and then Yehoshua was very angry that they tricked him. And he says to them, Lama rimitem otanu limora chokim anachnu mikem o'od v'atem b'kirbenu yoshvim. Why did you're our next door neighbor, why did you say you come from far? So I'm going to curse you. Arurim atem b'lo yikaret mikem eved v'chotzpim. You're forever going to be the lower class. You're going to be servants and wood choppers and water drawers. That's going to be your lot in life. Doesn't mean none of you will be destroyed. It means you'll never stop being. So when the bracha says, it means they should stop. They should stop being your oivim. Next. Another pasuk in Yehoshua, when Yavin Melech Hatzor wants to go to get a whole bunch of kings together to go to war against the Jewish people, Hashem says to Yehoshua not to worry. Ki machar ka'et hazot anochi noten et kulam chalalim lifnei Yisrael. I'm gonna decimate them all. Et susehem te'akervet markavotehem tisrofeish. You're gonna burn their chariots and their horses te'aker. Not you're going to kill them. Ta'aker, you're going to mess up their footsteps. You're going to make them stumble. You're going to make it not easy for them to move. Okay, so that's what it means. B'hazedim me'ra ta'aker. Hashem, you should quickly make it not easy for them to get around, these zedim that are messing up our life. Go to the tochacha. All the bad news. So, towards the middle of the Tochacha, Hashem says the following: and if these first things don't work, lo tishma'uli, you're not going to listen, I will continue to make you suffer seven times more than what you did. And what will I do? And through that suffering, I will break your arrogance. Now, that's not a physical smashing a person's body. That's breaking arrogance. That's bringing you to your knees, humiliating you. Okay. Hazedim mehera tishaber. You should humiliate them. You should bring them to their knees. We don't want you to actually destroy them, says Rav Machlenberg. And then finally, in Bereishis, in the Bracha of Dan, so Dan gets this bracha that he's going to, it's a form of warfare he's going to be good in, that he's going to be an excellent, he's going to be able to handle the horses well and the other horsemen, and he's going to bite into the ankles of the horses. And the rider of the enemy horse is going to fall backward. Now, that doesn't look like that has anything to do with the bracha, except when you look in the Targum, he says, he explains Vayipol as v'yimager. That timager means you'll make them fall. Okay, yeah, we want them to fall. We don't want them to have the upper hand. It's not the same thing as destruction, as smashing them to smithereens, as killing them. And I look at this source, and my first thought, you know, it's not so compelling. This is really a stretch. It's really a stretch that Shmuel HaKatan had this in mind. I'm not sure I believe it. But you know what that does for me? That's almost even more powerful. Because it means that it was so anathemic, even to the Ksav HaKabbalah all those years later, is so impossible to imagine that we would offer a negative bracha like this again to ask for the demise of human beings. It can't be. Whether he's right or he's wrong, it doesn't matter. It means that's how we have to feel about a negative bracha. But what do I do? It's in Shmoneh Esrei. So I'm going to close with, there is more to say, but time is running late. So I'm going to close with the following idea. It's presented by Rav Kirzner, the author of The Art of Tefillah, one of the two authors of The Art of Tefillah. It is remarkable because it turns this bracha, and I'm not saying that when Klal Yisrael is in trouble and there's an enemy that's out to get us, that we shouldn't have them in mind in this bracha. We're not better than the Tzkufa of Rama Gamliel, and if it's necessary, it's necessary. But on an everyday basis, who are these enemies? So Rav Kirzner said, those enemies, they're the little voices inside of us. The ones that are our little personal apikorsen. The ones that look at life and say, really? Are you sure there's somebody out there? Are you sure there's hashgacha pratis? It doesn't look so good today. When was the last time you saw real revelation in your life? Those little voices inside of you, or the voices external to you, the articles you read, the biblical criticism you read, whatever it is, we like to be open. We don't want to close ourselves off. But with that openness comes those other voices. And he says, today, that's who those enemies are. Utishaber, utimager, v'tachnia. We should bring them to a point of destruction. And that becomes, it's breathtaking, because that actually becomes a bracha, not simply for the demise of the enemies of the Jewish people, but it becomes a bracha for Emunah Shelema, that anything that works against my Emunah Shelema should be destroyed. And that is something even Shmuel HaKatan would not have had a problem with. I thank you so much. It's amazing that you get a number like this at a time like this. I'm very, very happy to have seen you. I'm very, very happy to see the the girls from my shul. You were among the first ones on. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you, Rabbi Bernstein, for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry I missed the beginning, but really, really appreciate you being here with us this evening. And Baruch Hashem, we have such a community like this, and you're part of that community. Ashreinu and Ashreichem, all of our students, to have had this opportunity to learn together with Rebbetzin Neuberger. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful summer, everybody.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Really, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Same.